Dr. Rob Lander joins us, and I'm going to let you start, Rob. And we can go into the history, and you can do whatever you want to do. But let's, you know, let's teach some people some cool stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Mark. Appreciate it.
I'm just glad you got the time to take it. I know you've got your practice, you do lots of stuff, and now you even got that tavern, which I just where I haven't been to yet, and I'm looking forward to going there.
Yeah, I keep busy.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, this is my fourth hospital I've built, so it's and my last. I think it's gonna be sticking around here for a while. It's a great location, great place.
Well, you know, when we first met, you had that one facility, and you were calling at that time, you know, with the Colorado Center for Animal Pain Management, which I always found really intriguing. You know, obviously I'd been there before. Want to talk a little bit about that and how you specialize that and, you know, some of the things people can do and the options they have out there?
Yeah, CCAPM is Colorado Center for Animal Pain Management was a specialty side business that was generated off my general practice I've had for many, many, many years. I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years ago, I started down the field of pain specialty and becoming a diplomat with the American Academy of Pain Management. Went through the acupuncture program and became certified acupuncturist, certified nutritional pain management, and certified in rehab. So it's one of those things where professionally it's gone to a point where there's not many locations or facilities that really specialize in pain as an entity by itself. When I sold my very large practice back in 17, I had a period where I had a mild, kind of restrictive covenant for general medicine. So I opened CCAPM as a separate entity, and that restrictive covenant now is over. So I basically reopened under CCAPM Veterinary Care Center, which is a full general practice and pain specialty rehab facility as well. The science of pain and the advent of pain therapy and companion animals is growing and it needs a lot of work too, but there's a lot of really cool, exciting therapeutics that we can use to improve their quality of life and not have to euthanize for chronic debilitating pain.
You know, one of the things I bring up in the show all the time is the correlation between animals and humans. I mean, when I always say to everybody that, you know, animals have the same issues we have. And when you see the human world, there's all kinds of pain clinics out there, but you don't really see pain clinics for animals, which I think is really interesting that what you're doing. And of course, you can get into it, but we don't really ever think that way. I'm obviously, you and I spent some time in the industry, and we think the same way that, you know, there is a correlation between humans and animals. And we have, you know, like I said, same diseases, same issues, but that's why we have to take that approach, I think.
Yeah, you know, you try and compare animals to humans. You know, a lot of pain pathophysiologies are very similar, but their reactions, their behaviors, and their outcomes are a little bit different. And that kind of can go into a whole concept of prey versus predator animals versus lab rats to dogs to cats to how certain species and different humans can perceive and deal with pain differently. So we just have the advent of animals that don't communicate and cannot communicate or quantify their pain, but they still do have a lot of dysfunction. They have a lot of anxiety. They have a lot of behavioral changes, all related to discomfort and pain, which they don't know what's going on. Humans can kind of pinpoint where the pain's coming from a lot of times and have choices that in their lifestyles that create pain. Dogs don't, and cats don't. Cats would be a whole nother podcast, but we have a lot of avenues of therapeutics that are being developed on both human and veterinary side to help target the pathophysiology of pain, to target the severity of pain that both people and pets are feeling. We have the advent of a lot more. Now, I've done more stem cells in dogs than I think are readily available for people. And it's the science behind a lot of these things are coming. And dogs, cats do feel pain. And, you know, whether they perceive it or show it is just a variation in their species.
So let's expand upon that a little bit. So you're a pet owner. You've got a dog or a cat. And since they can't communicate it, what's the best way if you're a pet owner that for them to, I mean, they may know that they hurt themselves, but they don't know what kind of pain they are. So what would you tell people, one, to look for, two, what to do about it, and, you know, the whole gambit?
When I talk to owners of canine patients, you know, the one thing I kind of tell them is loss of function is one of the number one signs of pain in dogs. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I have a three-legged dog come in, but the owners say, oh, he's not painful. I say, well, he is because he's not walking on the leg. And we have to figure out what the origin of pain is and what this, you know, is it inflammatory pain? Is it a back issue? Is it pulled muscles? We have to go down a good diagnostically tree of diagnosing things, put your hands on the pet. But for owners, it's really just kind of looking at their behaviors. Mm-hmm. Are they using a limb? Are they not walking? Are they favoring it? Are they limping? Are they laying around more? Are they not as active? Do they get up in the morning, walk around, and then lay down the rest of the day? Are they becoming more aggressive? Are they becoming aggressive to other pets that are around them? Are they being more sensitive to non-painful stimulus? Are they being painful to brushing? Are they acting out with brushing? For cats, they stop eating. They stop being social. They start lashing out. They start having a hard time going to the bathroom in the cat box. You know, there's differences there. But for people who don't understand how to recognize that, they have to first recognize that they do feel pain. And there's a lot of people that feel that animals don't. And so I know today's time, people, companion animals are more of their family tree, and they do need to recognize that, you know, that pain can be a disease by itself and can impact the quality of life for those pets in many other avenues. Like other disease conditions can get worse with chronic pain and stress. So the biggest thing is just kind of recognizing behaviorals and physical attributes of discomfort or disuse.
Well, you know, one of the things I always tell people too is, you know what, and I've got tons of stories about animals feeling better after going through different treatments and that. But, you know, when you and I are sick or we're feeling bad, we're usually pretty grumpy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they are too, but most people don't think that way. Again, it's kind of a different mindset, realizing.
Yeah, it is.
Think of it the way we are. I mean, if we're not feeling good, I'm telling you what, I'm the biggest weenie in the world when I'm sick. So everybody knows I'm sick, and dogs can't communicate, but everybody will know me.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where a lot of the pain pathways that kind of involve your body's emotional status. I mean, people in chronic pain are usually typically depressed. Depression is one of the signs of chronic pain in people. And certainly dogs and cats can become recluse and depressed and have anxiety issues. And so it is something that we as pet owners should recognize. Is a dog could have a partial ACL tear and be completely normal wagging its tail, but every once in a while it'll pick its leg up. Just because a dog is wagging its tail is happy doesn't mean he's uncomfortable.
Right.
If they're not walking on it, there's a problem. And that's kind of the nice thing about the veterinary side of things, is there's no placebo effect. So to me, I don't find that dogs know I'm giving them a therapeutic and they can't understand that I'm telling them it's going to get better for them. They either get better or they don't. So where, you know, people who you say, oh, I'm going to give you placebo, I'm going to give you this therapeutic and you should see 20% increase in your function. Well, they may just think they are.
Absolutely. Well, that's a nice thing because, you know, if you're doing something that works, you're going to know it right away. It's going to be what it is.
Well, and some of the therapeutics take time too, right? So it's not, when you have chronic disease, you give a therapy for a day or two, it may not be ready to call it the quits yet. So you have to just think about letting certain things do their job without adverse side effects. And so some of these chronic debilitating diseases take a little bit of time to get to a maintenance where they're functional. And that's the big word, is maintaining these kiddos where they have a functional activity and a functional life, not suffering and miserable.
So do you have any like really great like success stories of dogs who came in that, I mean, that people would want to hear those heartwarming things? I mean, I hate to throw it to you. I warned you. I just thought about it as I was sitting here.
I have so many. I have so many. I've had the privilege of doing several clinical studies in conjunction with CO Neuroscience, and we have looked at gene therapies, using gene therapy for treatment of osteoarthritis, where we inject a certain protein that the body naturally produces in states of chronic pain, it gets suppressed, and we put it back in the joints of like hip dysplasia or elbow dysplasia, and those guys substantially improve their quality of life in terms of outcomes. And, you know, in the veterinary side of things, it's hard because how do you assess pain response?
Right.
And it really comes down to subjective assessments by the owner, and then there are some objective things we can do. And through those studies, I had a gait analysis where I could see tremendous increases in weight placement just by the change of the therapeutic. You know, I had some cancer patients that I did a CBD study on, and they were going to euthanize the dog because they had a tumor and it was painful. And I put them on a CBD product that was part of the high dose on the study, and dog lived another year and was happy. There are many, 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 many cases. And I just hope that the gene therapy actually goes through to FDA approval, because that therapeutic is not a drug. It's it kind of modulates the neuroimmune system, what the body does in states of pain. We're kind of prepping it to be more anti-inflammatory, anti-pain. So it works. The study, the data is there. It's just a matter of time.
Talk a little bit more about that, because I don't know much about the gene therapy. Of course, I know about stem cell therapy. I don't know much about gene therapy, and I'm sure everybody out there would be interested.
It was using interleukin-10, which is a cytokine that the body produces, which is one of your body's potent anti-inflammatory cytokines. And it's also a signal regulator of other down kind of stream regulation of inflammation. And so what we found is that, you know, in animals that had chronic pain, the body had so many pro-inflammatory cytokines in the joints that it was just constantly painful and constant inflammation and constant pain source. And so by injecting the IL-10, we noted that we suppressed the inflammatory response at the site of the injection or at the site of the disease, therefore decreasing the level of intensity from that joint, and then therefore they had more function. It was not a systemic treatment. It was a joint injection, and it was a gene therapy utilizing IL-10. And IL-10 is a cytokine, and it's one of those things your body produces in normal physiological states, but when you have chronic pain, the balance gets off kilter. And so that was one thing where stem cells are a little different. You know, it's one of those things where stem cells are inherently they do reduce inflammation. And the driving force of chronic degeneration of a joint is typically your neuroinflammation. And it's one of those things we have to just kind of go after that as a therapeutic to decrease that level of inflammation so that we can therefore decrease the pain that is being perceived.
What's your opinion on PRP? By the way, for you guys listening, PRP stands for platelet-rich plasma, and typically you can get into that, Rob, but when it's platelet-rich, it's usually 8 times more than when the body has, 16 times more.
Yeah, I think it's effective, but I think it definitely depends on how such PRP cells are isolated and processed. I think getting a high yield is not as simple as just a simple centrifugation that you can use in a clinic. You know, it's one of those things where I think the combination of stem cell and PRP is more advantageous for those kind of conditions that our goal is to reduce the severity of inflammation at the site of the problem. And, you know, it works. It just really comes down to how it's processed. And if you're processing it to a point where you're actually getting a high yield, which is key.
Well, I know like in the human world, I mean, people swear by it. I know several people that have had PRP therapy, which what I've learned through spending a lot of time with there, and I know you know this for a fact, but, you know, the problem with PRP is people think it's this magic thing. It only lasts from 45 to 60 days. I mean, after that, I call it the PRP effect. I mean, it's an anti-inflammatory for the most part, but that's about it.
Yeah, stem cells can last a little longer, but stem cells may also need a few more re-injections to kind of take camp.
Right.
But the combination themselves collectively, I think, helps better than just one or the other.
Well, I know that there's some theory out there that when you combine it with PRP, it actually helps activate the stem cells as well.
Correct. Yep.
So let's just go into some stories. I know everybody loves hearing stories. I love hearing stories. What's got me doing podcasts? Because I'm hearing all these stories all the time. I want to hear them because, you know, I've got a curiosity mind and I love hearing all these warm stories. Tell me one just to throw out different. When I should have primed you on that, but it just comes to me sometimes.
Well, I mean, personally, I had a Great Dane that had partial ACL tears, and he was 198 pounds.
Wow.
And he was 8 years old, 7 years old when he tore him. And they were partial tears, so he still had somewhat some stability in his knees. So I chose to use stem cells for him. He had a history of anti-inflammatory side effects, and so I did stem cells on him, and I got him another 2 years and no medications, which was great. And 2 years in a Great Dane world is actually pretty amazing. So.
Well, I mean, you know, the problem with Great Danes, they don't live very long.
They don't.
No.
Yeah. He ended up passing on something else when he was 9. So
I know that you're a big proponent of Eastern and Western medicine, and I am too, by the way. I mean, obviously, but let's talk a little bit out there because, you know, a lot of people go to vets. By the way, traditional vets are great vets. I mean, this is not either there. It's just an opinion. You know, I'm in favor. Whatever works, let's find it. So you got into this. Let's walk how you got into it, what your thoughts are, combining the two, integrative medicine, basically. So let's get into that a little bit just so to help educate anybody that's listening.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the medicine should be a collective approach, not just stuck on one thing, because it really never is a silver bullet. And the body's homeostasis has a lot of healing properties as well. And your body can do a lot of things with proper guidance. I think acupuncture is a great tool to complement Western therapies, and it really is case dependent. I do a lot of acupuncture to complement spinal cord disease and neuropathic pain, and I use laser, class 4 laser, to help with a lot of reduction in inflammation, inflammatory mediators that are in joints. Again, not as a solo thing. Dogs with chronic degenerative hip dysplasia will not respond to just laser alone, because those kind of therapeutics need repetition and repeat kind of schedules, dose dependent and patient dependent. Nutritionally, I think there's a lot of evidence out there that, you know, what we eat stimulates what our body's systemic inflammatory response is going to be and how much state of inflammation we have in our body. And I think the same thing goes with pets. You know, I think there's a lot of inflammation that's created systemically from what we eat. And so I think diet's a very important thing. And so it really is down the road as well that there is a lot of evidence-based stuff on what supplements help reduce systemic inflammation and the changes of aging and oxidation of cells in your body as you age. As we age, you know, they have, you know, I take CoQ10. It's a potent antioxidant. Your body goes through cellular changes that help create inflammation and joint instability. And to me, the avenues of supplemental protocols, proper vitamins, minerals, supplements, acupuncture, laser, manual therapies, such as manual massage, helps a great deal to complement least amount of pharmaceutical drugs as possible, not to replace them. You know, to me, I always advise my clients, my patients to take the least amount of medications as long as they are clinically functionally comfortable. And again, it has to do with the client's abilities to kind of come up with a collective program that fits within their budget and their family, because that also comes to cost. And so I always try to minimize the pharmaceutical drugs we use and kind of depending on the case, whether stem cells, PRP, scoping and joint injections and so many different things we can put in pets now that in their joints directly that, again, reduce inflammation to a point where they're not as painful. So it really is a collective integrated approach to medicine and to pain medicine. Not one should be ignored or the other.
You know, one of the things I always find interesting about acupuncture, and, you know, I've learned it through the years just from, you know, being around and talking to different vets and that. But generally, when you get like these older animals and you're doing acupuncture, these meridians, which is basically for you guys listening out there, if you don't know much about acupuncture, it's the place where they're going to place the needle. But often the times the meridians actually, as an example, they're going to treat kidney disease or, you know, an older dog. But kidneys are directly reflected with hearing. And so, you know, I've heard numerous times now where animals have been treated in the kidney and using acupuncture and other stuff that they're doing that actually these older dogs start hearing better. You can't measure it, but it's a true fact. I've heard it too many times not to believe that.
Yeah, I mean, also Western medical acupuncture versus acupuncture. There's, you know, there is evidence-based studies showing that Western medical acupuncture improves your body's natural inhibitory pathways. And again, that means your body doesn't want to be in pain.
Right.
And so acupuncture in the studies show that it does stimulate what they call quote unquote neuromodulation. And the whole premise is to improve your body's natural inhibitory pathways to dampen pain. But yes, in acupuncture and meridians, there are links to, you know, organ function. And, you know, I'll put points in for master points for stomach and small intestine when I have an animal who's on NSAIDs. I'll put points in for animals that are chronically painful who may have insufficient kidneys and put stuff in there too. So it's one of those things where it's a collective tool to use for overall balance of homeostasis of the body.
Again, if you've got a traditional vet that doesn't do it, doesn't mean you have to do it, but it's certainly an option. If you've got, you know, one of your furry friends out there that's, you're trying to find something, you just can't find it, you may want to start doing some research in that. Now, I know you're located, Rob, you're located out in Broomfield, just outside of Denver, for everybody in Denver, but you've had people travel up to see you on a regular basis.
Oh, I've had people come out from other states. I've had people come out from all over Colorado to talk about therapeutics. And then when I had the IL-10 study going, it was kind of limited to my practice. And that was a clinical study where I had to see them once a week for 4 weeks and then once every other week for another month. So that was kind of limited to people within a shouting distance of me. But yes, I mean, it's one of those things where I've had people travel far and wide to just get some consult on what therapeutics are out there. And then I help guide, maybe tell them what they can be done at their place, at their veterinarians, and then talk to them if they can do it or not.
Well, I'm plugging you. I mean, I talked to a lot of good people out there, but, you know, we've got to know each other over the last several years. And, and for you guys that you've got, you know, somebody that's got some pain issues, Rob's a great guy to talk to. I mean, he can help you in so many different ways. Obviously, you can tell by his verbiage and my lack of. You can tell who the intelligence point is on this podcast right now. But
pretty good, Mark. Pretty good. Yeah.
Well, I'm making you sound even better than you are. But anyways, why don't you tell people how to get a hold of you if they need to get a hold of you? And also, let's plug the tavern too.
Yeah. So I had an entrepreneur itch, and I opened up Blake's Tap House back in 2019. 2 months after that, the pandemic hit. So we survived the pandemic, and it's literally across the parking lot of my new hospital. So I basically walk back and forth 7 days a week. But it's Blake's Tap House. It's a craft beer tap house and restaurant. It's a great place to come hang out. And then CCAPM Veterinary Care Center. My email is drrob@ccapmvetcare.com. And the number is 720-502-5823. We're always accepting new clients, and, you know, we'll never not do that. I've been doing this for quite quite some time. And I love what I do, and I love making a difference in our patients' lives and their clients' lives. They can see it. So you treat pain effectively in their pets, they're going to be much happier people. We just got to be that other family doctor and help them out as much as we can.
Well, you do a great job. Now, I prepped you. Do you have a joke? Because I've got one that's ideal to what you were saying earlier, by the way.
Let me see if my staff put one on the door. Hello.
Okay.
So my staff, at the end of the day, they always put jokes in the back door when we leave. They're kind of dad jokes, but
they're perfect.
Dogs can't operate MRI machines, but cats can.
Good one.
And what do you call a rabbit with fleas?
What?
Bugs Bunny.
Well, I got one for you.
Okay.
And this is actually for everybody out there, too. So it's ideal, because earlier we were talking about a dog comes on three legs. So a three-legged, and this is actually, you can talk about the tavern. A three-legged dog walks into a bar and says, "I'm looking for the man who shot my paw."